عاش حزب الشعب الجيجة رغم أهل الظالمين وإذا ما عاش يوجد بهما
Welcome to the fifth episode of Tahrir Podcast. You can reach us via email at tahrirpodcast@gmail.com, tahrirpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow us on Instagram for constant updates. Don't forget to leave a rating after you've listened to the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and make sure you're subscribed to get the latest news. And my guest today is Ahmed Nada, a staunch Egyptian communist and a six-year member of the Egyptian Communist Party. Welcome, man.
Hi, thanks for having me. So, I should preface this by saying that the membership is very much former at this point. Not to say that I grew out of it, more just things happened. I guess I should go back to how it started. So, back in 2011, you might remember, you know, the revolution happened. I was 12. Right. More or less, the sequence of events was mostly the same as most people, how they got into the revolution. It just sort of happened, right? In my case, I grew up in a building with a lot of old people, a lot of retirees. Military police checkpoint, not too far away. And those are the people who came over and said, more or less, there's going to be trouble in the next few days. It started like January 28th. Right when the police more or less stopped existing, and they formed citizen militias, right? And because my building was mostly old people, they enlisted everyone who was under 60, more or less. So that included me. Then the army just sort of disappeared. They just gave people weapons. I didn't hold any firearms for a prolonged period of time, just to be clear, and I didn't kill anyone. Just for legal sake. But they, after they left, the people who took over were these new faces that we hadn't seen before, right? People saying that they were communists, socialists, the Black Bloc were anarchists. This was all a new world to all of us, more or less. Very few people were aware that these organizations existed. Even fewer people had worked with them before. Even fewer people thought they were legal, and they weren't. But more or less, they took over the organizing, the actual organizing of how the citizen militias worked. They were the adults in the room, in my case.
You mean the anarchists and the Black Bloc?
Yes, mainly the Communist Party overall.
Mm. In your neighborhood or in Egypt in general?
I'm not sure about in general, but I know it was widespread. For my neighborhood, for most of Giza, parts of Cairo, I'm pretty sure. But it varies, of course. Like, there were places like Kirdesa where the army wasn't involved at all and they just armed themselves. And those more or less were just spontaneous militias without any input. Then there were places like Helwan where the unions were involved from day one, even before the 28th, where they replaced the police more or less right away. Even more extreme examples were places like Alexandria or Bort Tawfiq or Bort Said, where the police were removed. But I'll get to those cities in particular. Like, they're pretty important when it comes to the history of the movement. My role in the 2011 revolution wasn't very big, considering I was 12. Most of what I did was just patrol around. But gaining that experience helped in the interim. After 2011 was the easy part. I think most people who were involved would tell you that. That was the sort of kumbaya period. There was a lot of death. I had therapy for PTSD. Right, that lasted like 7 years. But it was still...
Because you've seen something happen?
Yeah, a few of my neighbors were shot. I took some flechettes. No one can see this because it's a podcast, but... Like, there's a faded scar around, like, the edge
from
of my wrist still. From the police, yeah. Thugs were not much of a problem in my area, mainly because most of them were on our side. Most of them were sick of the police. It was a similar story in Kirdesa, Helwan. people who are quote unquote criminals were mostly just people who were criminalized, right? The bigger problem was the mafia, which obviously like stayed a problem long into around like 2016, 17. That's what happens, the police just disappear. After 2011 was the part where I started to get acquainted with these people a bit more.
Which people?
More or less the Communist Party more than anything else. Black Bloc was there. They were sort of an ever-present, especially in the area. But their influence was more how to operationalize what we learned. Most of what we learned was stuff like, to control a street, you have to cut it off, right? Avoid road medians, that kind of stuff. Practical info, but we didn't know how to translate it into meaningful change. The communists knew because they worked with unions before, and a lot of these unions had sort of institutional memory. A lot of them were involved in Kifeya back in 2005. Even more of them were involved in the 1977 bread riots. Right, there were people in the unions that they involved us with. For example, the Eastern Company Union, the cigarette company. They knew how to strike, how to organize, because they'd done it before in the 70s. And it was sort of surreal to find out that these people still existed this whole time. Honestly, at that point, I don't have specific numbers, more or less because the Communist Party was illegal for most of my lifetime, so they didn't exactly keep membership rolls. But more or less, until 2011, the Communist Party was 10,000 people, like, at most.
When?
Around, like, 2011. Like, that was more or less their peak, right? But after that, you could say it went up to like a million, maybe 5 million. No one really knows, again, because it was still illegal.
What made you reach that speculation?
It's more about the people we kept finding wherever we'd go. Like in 2013, during the 2013 revolution, they sent us to Tahrir Square. Because
the Communist Party.
Yeah. They sent us to Tahrir Square alongside the Black Bloc to more or less to stop sexual harassment, prevent the police from intervening. I will say, for the police's credit, they were good sports in 2013. They didn't shoot anyone much. I mean, if you're part of the Brotherhood, you disagree, but at least in Tahrir Square, the Communist main goal in 2013 was more or less to make sure the transition happened seamlessly, because they wanted to be part of the coalition that came out of the other side, right? If anyone remembers, like, the constitutional amendments, there were communists in the building, and people from the Tagamwa Party, more or less the oldest socialist party in the country at this point. They were involved in the revolution as well. They were involved from the very beginning. Tagamwa was more or less the main liaisons between us and the unions alongside the Communist Party, but they were bigger. Like, Tagamwa had offices in every city because they were legal. They had like actual membership cards, they had like actual headquarters, they had party material that we could distribute. Most of us didn't consider ourselves part of either party. Like, we were just working with these parties. A lot of us weren't communists. I wasn't a communist at first. I think I became one around like 2013. It took me a couple of years because I was young, right? I didn't know what the fuck this stuff meant. But the program made sense, at least to me. The point at which it started to shift was after the Constitution was written. Because the stuff we did...
Constitution?
Yes. Because after that point, you couldn't get away with civil disobedience anymore. You had to, like, actually acknowledge the state. Before, it was more or less anarchy. And I mean that in the bad way. And that was what created the split. So you had Tagamwa, who already knew how to deal with a formal state. They've been doing it since the 70s. Like, they know their way around bureaucracy. They know their way around the police. And then you had the communists, who honestly was new to us. And I say us because at this point, like, we became the new face of the movement. The old faces, people like Abul Aziz al-Hariri, who led the Communist Party from the 80s onwards, he was the old guard. He also died like not long after 2012, so not hung. The new faces, mostly his son, Haitham al-Hariri, that kind of generation.
Faith,
Yeah, he was in parliament in 2015, but then failed in his re-election, and I'll get to that because that was a big moment too. That was part of the reason why I left. The new guard, we didn't really know what we were doing, honestly. But we had a lot of success, especially in areas like Bulat Dakur, Kirdesa, places that felt abandoned, especially by the establishment parties.
But what do you mean by you found success? You mean campaigning and gaining exposure there?
Mainly campaigning for parliament and for local stuff. There weren't local elections yet. We still don't have local elections. We're supposed to at some point. And those will be interesting. But it was stuff like student organizing. For example, like the head of the student union, like the nationwide student union, is a member of Tagamo, who grew up as part of the Communist Party as well. Right, that we were gaining these positions. The head of the student union in Ismailia, the head of the student union of the Suez Canal University in Ismailia as well. They're all communists, right? These are the new face of the movement, more or less. These were all the generation that came out of 2011 and 2013. The big thing is, because we didn't have much experience, because we didn't know what we were doing, we tended to lean back on what we learned in the revolution, mostly civil disobedience stuff, which was a big no-no at the time. For people who don't remember, around 2014-15 was a very difficult time to protest. It was pretty unstable, the state felt weak. It was more or less impossible to do any kind of civil disobedience without being labeled as a terrorist. And that's what happened to the Black Bloc. Right? They didn't want any part. They didn't want anything to do with this. They didn't want to be in parliament. They didn't want to organize with student unions. They didn't want to do any of this stuff. They thought of it as bullshit, right? And there were people who were sympathetic to that view. So the Black Bloc, they more or less kept organizing against the government regardless. They didn't change their tactics. For the Black Bloc, their story, no one really knows how it started. At least no one in the circles that I'm with knows how it started. It just sort of appeared during the revolution. Maybe it was a result of Occupy in the US, like copying those tactics. Maybe they appeared on the sidelines of Kifaya. No one's really sure. But we're sure how they ended. They ended when they started banding together with ultras groups. And then the events in Borsaid were the beginning of the end, when ultras groups were blacklisted by the state, by Tantawi. And then the final end was after the Air Defense Stadium disaster, where the ultras tried to break in. That was more or less when the state made them a terrorist group, designated them as a terrorist group, and started massacring their support base. Not literal massacres, mostly. But a lot of them were arrested, a lot of them were exiled. A few of them stayed around until the formal disbanding of the ultras groups in like 2015, 2016. But more or less, anarchists as an organized entity don't exist anymore in Egypt. Not on a wide scale like they used to. Like the Black Bloc easily could have been 100,000, 200,000 people at their peak. But distributed though. Mostly in Cairo and Alexandria, but still a bit distributed across the country. After the elections in 2015, most of the organizing we did was around getting the MPs we got. We got quite a bit of MPs.
Can you name some of them?
One of them, my memory is kind of hazy right now. Other than Haitham al-Harri, obviously, there was one of the leaders of Tagamwa, Marianne Azar. There was one who was appointed by CC, which we didn't expect, Karim Meher. Then you had people more or less like representatives for local areas. I can't remember his name. if he heard me, he'd probably want to punch me in the face because we meet up with each other a lot. But the MP for Bulat Dakur, the main guy, he was one of the communists as well. The problem, though, is in 2012 and in 2015, the Communist Party was illegal. Not yet.
Wasn't legal?
No, not yet. So they either ran candidates with Tagamo, or they ran them with two other parties. And this is the point where I want to take myself out of the equation and go into the history of the communist movement. When I say communist, I mean Marxist, because there were socialists and communists in Egyptian history before. But the Marxists really start with Hattu. Hattu was the Harka Demokratia, more or less. They were a movement of mainly students, mainly foreigners. And
one second. Hattu?
Hattu.
Hattu?
Yeah, they're...
You mean the Harka Madaniya Demokratia?
Yes.
The Alliance?
Yeah, they started in, I think, the 20s or 30s, something like that. One of the older parties. They lasted until the 50s. Their main issue was they weren't very big. Like, they probably peaked on, like, 3,000 to 5,000 people at most. Mostly students, mostly foreigners. Because at the time, like, if you weren't WAFD, you weren't getting anywhere. But then when the 1952 revolution happened, a lot of the leadership of Hattu left. Because they felt threatened by the new Arab rhetoric that Nasser came in with. Nasser was very skeptical of Hattu because they were foreigners mainly, and the ones who weren't were influenced by them. So a lot of them were purged or exiled, and the party was more or less disbanded. It sort of existed for a few years until the mid-50s, but then it more or less ceased to meaningfully exist once Nasser took over. The two watershed moments were when the Kofr al-Dawar strike happened. That was very early on. When the free officers took over in 1952, they promised more rights to unions. Unions were very young. Industry was very young. We had like two factories across the entire country. There was one in Mahalla and Kofr al-Dawar. The one in Kofr al-Dawar had a strike that was partially organized by Hattu. And the unions had been close to Hattu because there are only a handful of unions, and most of the union literature, how to build one, came from them. Which, of course, Nasser saw as a problem because these unions were founded based on foreign principles. Right? He immediately equated foreign with spy, more or less. It's also unclear who was really in charge at this point, whether it was Mohammad Naguib or Abdel Nasser. Like, Abdel Nasser, he had an energy that you couldn't escape. But Naguib was formally in charge at the time, and they just executed the two leaders of the strike. Now, this actually ended up working in favor for the unions because it led to more strikes and solidarity strikes, and they ended up granting unions more rights than they had promised. This may also be the thing that led to the rupture in the free officers in the first place, between the ones who wanted a more left-wing kind of Nasserism and between the ones who wanted a more right-wing thing. What happened after Hattu was involved in this was they were purged from the country, like I said, and exiled. The other watershed moment was when the USSR tried to come in. And because they were foreign, because they were a superpower, Nasser saw them as imperialists. This didn't change no matter what they did. And he saw Hattu as their spies. Because, you know, these guys are communists, these guys are communists, they're both Western, they're both, or, you know, Western in quotes, they're both foreign. So they must be related. This wasn't helped when the USSR sent a list of Hattu members because they were liaising with them. But they weren't... No one can really say for sure, but I don't think personally that they were puppets of theirs. But this was the nail in the coffin. He disbanded the movement entirely. He banned any of the members. But he did allow some of the members to continue acting. Right? He allowed them if they joined the Arab Socialist Union. It wasn't formally called that at the time, but it was the seeds of it. The next moment for the Communist Party wouldn't come until 1956, during the tripartite aggression. During that, there was a current of more or less citizen militias as well. Like you see a lot of parallels between 2011 and 1956, where whenever there's a citizen militia involved, the left has a resurgence. Because the police and the army weren't capable of protecting Bursaid in 1956, the militias took over. And one of the largest militias was the feminist militia. They were led by Rawi Atayya, who at the time was sort of a commando. The commandos didn't exist yet. But she became one later on. She was given the rank of captain honorarily afterward. She organized women into militias mainly to protect their homes, but then to retake what the British and French had taken. The problem is that, for the government at the time, the problem is that feminism and Marxism were intertwined at this point. There was a current of feminism that wasn't intertwined, the kind from like Huda Sha'rawi, that kind of generation from the 20s, it was mostly that 1920s feminism, I guess the first wave of Egyptian feminists, was more about just stating that women aren't just breeding machines, right? The next wave that came with people like Karwai Atoya were about saying that women have a bigger role to play than just that, that they have to assert that they are an underclass and that this isn't how they should be. And this, of course, leads you to talking about liberation. And when you talk about classes and class liberation, you end up with Marxism more often than not. And I should say that Nasser wasn't like an enemy of Marxism, right? Like he himself was a socialist. The problem is that he saw any foreign influence as bad. This gets compounded when the USSR sends material aid to the feminist militia because Marx has got to hang around. Marx has got a Marxist. And there are pictures, if you look for them, of the feminist militias receiving crates from the USSR of like SKSs and Mohsen Nagants and material aid, medicine, all that kind of stuff. But then after the 1956 war ended, they were more or less like a fact. They existed. The state couldn't ignore them anymore. And they weren't foreign. They were backed by foreigners, but they weren't foreign themselves. So in the first election, 1957, they allowed Roy Atoya to run for parliament as a member of the Arab Socialist Union. This was controversial, and she was a controversial figure because she was more pro-US than pro-USSR for personal reasons. She saw it as more as a freer society for women. I disagree. A lot of people disagree, but that's where she stood. And so the nascent communist movement that came out of the feminist militias never really went anywhere. But the ideas that it created lived. And a lot of the people who came out of that movement stuck around and started to mingle with the unions. And this became an undercurrent within the Arab Socialist Union. This started to influence how they acted. And this is partly the undercurrent that became Tagammo later when the Arab Socialist Union got disbanded and turned into the Democratic Party. The next phase, the next point at which the communists become relevant is the 70s. Once Sadat removed the bread subsidies, which led to the 77 bread riots, that Tagammo had just come into existence a year earlier in 76. They weren't the party that they are now, right? Even though Tagammo don't have many MPs, they're still like a huge party with HQs everywhere, with offices in every village and every government, right? But they weren't that at the time. They were still young. The communists, on the other hand, had the unions. And they had, most importantly, they had the factories. This is how they sort of rebuilt the movement. So the Communist Party we have now, this is when it starts, with the bread riots. And, you know, you guessed it, there were citizen militias during the bread riots. It always comes back to militias. The problem with that is that they got illegalized. Tagammo was also illegalized briefly for a while, but then they came back because there were too many free officers for it to stay illegal. Whenever free officers are involved, the state can't really handle it. Once the bread riots were over and the bread subsidies were brought back, the communists didn't really know what to do. They didn't really have a reason to exist anymore. And they were illegal, unlike Tagammo, so most of them went into Tagammo, except a few. A few of them didn't believe that working from within the system would work, that you had to bring the system down and start fresh, which is what they saw 2011 as an opportunity to do. The other side of this were people like Khaled Mohiddin in Tagammo, who thought, we can work within the system, we can fix it. A crude example of this would be like, you could think of Tagammo as like the Bernie Sanders of the of the Egyptian left, right? I can fix this from inside. Though much farther left, obviously. Whereas the communist movement was more fringe than that. That kept them small. But they were still influential. A few people who liaised with the movement were people like Georges Hawk, who went on to sort of co-found the Revolutionary Socialists, who existed for like 3 seconds and then stopped being anything apart from an Instagram page. But more importantly, people like Frida Shubeshi and Noel Sadawi, like Lair Hamam. Frida Shubeshi, now a member of parliament, she was the speaker for the first few sessions. The the big change that came after the revolution was, even though the Communist Party was still illegal, it only became legalized in 2016 when Hayatam al-Hariri, as an MP from, he considered himself an independent so he could run, proposed legalizing the party. But until then, it had to work through other parties. The main thing they did was they called it the Socialist Popular Alliance. That's how they ran for office. It was created after the revolution, mainly so Abu al-Azhar Hariri could run for president. The problem is that the Socialist Popular Alliance had no history. It just sprung up into existence. It had the same issue that the Social Democratic Party had for a while, where it's like one of the alphabet soup of parties that just came into existence after the revolution. Who the fuck are you? The problem too is that Tagamo weren't willing to sign on with the communists in the elections. So the left was fragmented. If anyone remembers the 2012 elections, the left had the plurality of the votes. Right? If you had Hamdin Sabahi, Abu al-Azhar Hariri, Khaled Ali, who was more of a social democrat, but anyway, the 3 billion Tagamo candidates, if you add them all together, they get like 40% of the votes on their own. Hamdin Sabahi on his own was like third by 1% difference from Morsi. But he wasn't allowed into the second round. I'm sure that has nothing to do with Morsi's cousin running the election, but anyway, let's leave that aside. So that created a bit of a rift, especially after Abu al-Azhar Hariri died, because he was the guy Tagamo more or less respected, at least as a person, because he was around since the 70s. He was one of the OGs. But that left a vacuum. In the 2015 election, and this is where we come back to where I left off, they were still illegal, and the Popular Alliance was a failure. They ran a few candidates under the Popular Alliance. It didn't really work. They got their asses kicked, including by themselves, because they set up two new parties. The first was Hamad al-Watan. General Galal Hariri, who was a free officer, he's like 95 now. He's a senator, by the way. Like I think he's a vice president of the Senate, or a vice speaker, I mean. He had the idea of making the Communist Party go mainstream with the free officer bent. So he preferred calling them like left-wing Nasserists, which sounds weird. It's like saying left-wing socialists. Like, what's that mean? He framed it as more farther left than Tagamo, farther left than Dignity, Sabahi's party, who also got their asses kicked. And this sort of worked in tandem with the Communist Party. Like Hayatam al-Hariri saw them as part of the party. The other party was the Republican People's Party. These guys were more controversial. They called themselves the center of the left. Not center left, but the center of the left. They wanted to be like the vanguard party that would absorb all the votes. And it kind of worked. They were better at advertising themselves. I was with Hamad al-Watan, so I'm pretty bitter about this. But they were better at organizing. They were better at targeting which voter groups to go after. They were better at mobilizing their image. And they were less standoffish. Like Hamad al-Watan, the actual party platform includes abolishing the state at some point. The Republican People's Party has no platform. Like, its platform is more or less just make lives better somehow. It's quite similar to the Social Democratic Party and its platform, actually, which kind of helped, right? After the revolution, people were more or less looking for a more moderate rule. This was especially true after 2013, where it felt like Morsi had torn the country apart, right? So the Republican People's Party came out as, I believe, the fifth largest party in that election.
Which election?
The 2015.
Yeah. 2015 or 2020?
2015. Yeah. In 2020, they're the second largest individual party.
But they're still, it was put together by the state, just like the Mustaqbal Watan, the future of Nation.
Sort of.
Like they're very similar in that sense.
Sort of. The Nation's Future Party is more overt. They ironically came out of the Social Democratic Party, like their leader was a Social Democratic Party organizer. But they have a lot of appendages from the state and from the National Democratic Party. Whereas the Republican People's Party, they got more co-opted by steel. Because the steel unions were involved, they had the steel magnates involved, and now Abu Hashim is like a vice president of the party, and that's part of why the communists never really identified with them, but they still worked together when they got into parliament, because, you know, 50 MPs here, 50 MPs there, at least become one coherent unit. Hamad al-Watan didn't do too badly either. I think they were the fourth or fifth largest party in 2015, which was quite the showing from a party that didn't exist like 10 minutes ago. And Tagamo is in there as well. They all together formed a sort of coalition, though Tagamo is more, they see themselves more as principled opposition. They don't want to work with anyone else. They see themselves as the only legitimate socialist party because they're the heirs of the Arab Socialist Union, which might seem dumb to someone who sees how few MPs they have now, but genuinely they have a presence, right? Like when they speak, people listen because they have the unions on their side. They have more unions on their side than Hamad al-Watan does, more than the Communist Party does, etc. So from 2015 to 2020, the communists were more just there in parliament. They became more relevant in 2018 when the Nation's Future Party and the Free Egyptians Party had a rupture. They couldn't agree on healthcare, they couldn't agree on local development, they couldn't agree on anything, basically. So the Nation's Future Party pivoted more toward the communists to gain their votes instead. This led to more cabinet members, including a minister of housing, Mustafa Mabouli, who was part of Hamad al-Watan. He won't tell you this these days because he's supposed to be independent. Right? By law, the prime minister has no party affiliation anymore. But he's one of the people who came out of the previous generation. Right? He was part of a student union who was heavily into the Communist Party. Briefly was in Tagamo. He was one of the people who saw a more institutional role for the party, a more normalized role, sort of what they have now, right?
So he was a former communist.
Yes. I think he'd describe himself closer to a social democrat now, just for the sake of controversy. But part of his dream came true of normalizing the party. This was Galal Haridi's dream as well, to make the communists part of the political fabric, right? They're not like, excuse the Arabic, like mutatarrifin, right? They're not just wackos like Black Bloc or they exist to progress the state, more or less. And this is sort of where Hamad al-Watan are now. Shabu Gumhuri broke off completely once the steel magnates came in. They're still left wing, but they're kind of problematic. I would describe them as like center-left at this point. The Communist Party, in the 2020 election, it had a rupture, and this was why I left. The elections had issues with timing, right? COVID was happening, so turnout was low, lower than before. It was already low in 2015, but it was lower than before because of COVID, because of storms, especially in Alexandria. Haysam al-Hariri got into the second phase of his election, of his seat election, pretty easily. Like, he was top three in the candidates. So he was one of the six in the re-election, or in the second round, I mean. And he lost pretty badly in the second round. And this was mainly because there was a storm at the time, right? So people couldn't actually vote. They physically couldn't get to the polls. And the way the elections were run was Egyptians abroad would vote within the districts they last lived in. So most of the people who voted for the Nation's Future Party candidate didn't live in Egypt. So this also happened in Kirdes and Gulad Dakur. Like, we had a bunch of communists unseated in those areas because of Egyptians abroad. This wasn't an issue in 2015. Egyptians abroad just had seats allocated to them separately. It was the Nation's Future Party who changed the system, and they were the biggest benefactors of it. It might change again. They might go back to
the list.
Well, the list was an issue as well. But this was more just how votes were tallied in general. With the list was more just, again, a statement of fact, right? You were either going to be part of the unified list or you weren't going to win. This was sort of challenged in Cairo and the Central Delta because the list only won by like 1 or 2%. against the Alliance of Independence.
This election?
Yes, you need to get 2/3 to avoid a rerun, and they got like exactly like 68%, which terrified them, right? Like the idea of the list only barely squeaking by, even though it has like all the ideologies, they collected ideologies like Pokemon to make sure that everyone had something to vote for. They still nearly had to deal with a re-election or a second round. The problem with the list is that we were lied to, right? And this got under everyone's skin, especially Haitham al-Hariri, because at this point he had lost his election because of more or less party bullshit, because of electioneering, because of a party that has unlimited funds that like had more ads abroad than we had in the country. When they were making up the list, the Nation's Future Party agreed with the communists that they would have 120 seats. The Republican People's Party would have 60. And the Homeland Defenders Party, Matul Watan, would have 60. So it's 120, 120, and the rest was split between the liberal parties and the Social Democratic Party. After the election ended, and there's been a law amendment to prevent this from happening again because it was that bad, WEFT contested the seat apportionment. Because in the original apportionment, they get something like 6 seats. But they argued in court that they got more percentage of the seats than they were going to be given based on individual elections. So the judge ruled that based on this, the Nation's Future Party shouldn't get 120 seats. They should get 140 because they won even more individual seats as a percentage. Right, so this ended up with something like 140 for the Nation's Future Party, something like 40 for the Republican People's Party, and like 60 for Homeland Defenders Party. So obviously, like losing almost half the seats was some real bullshit, right? Right. Everyone can blame WEFT. WEFT blame themselves because they're still relevant in Parliament now. But the issue tore the party apart. Right, you had people who said, okay, just play the hand you're dealt, Amr Waqa. We just have to deal with how it shook out. Haitham took more of the route of contesting the election's validity. A lot of people saw this, myself included, because I'm biased here. A lot of people saw this as a losing battle. Like, you're contesting the validity of elections because of a few bullshit events, but the elections overall were fair. Like, overall, like, it was pretty transparent. They didn't have to rig it, right? They had more or less unlimited money.
They had the media.
They had the media. They had free ads everywhere. Like, they didn't have to rig it. This could be, like, the freest election in the history of the world. It didn't really matter.
It depends how you define freedom in that sense.
Yeah.
Ballot box-wise, maybe it was the freest, as you said, but looking at democracy in the broader sense, no, it wasn't democratic.
It's that buzzword of like free and fair elections. It was free, but it definitely wasn't fair.
Yeah.
It was fair procedurally, but not the meta election wasn't fair. One example of this was Zazi, right? The seat for Zazi. The way individual elections work, just briefly, is you get as many votes as there are seats. So in Zazi, there are four seats. So everyone in that area got 4 votes. Could vote for 4 different candidates. So this means that a party would at most run 4 people, right? But there was a limit on how much the party could spend per candidate. I think it was around like a 1.2 million or 1 million or something like that per candidate, right? So now explain why the Nation's Future Party ran 5 candidates and one of them didn't even campaign. This is in court, by the way. Like, this is being challenged in court as to whether or not this is a flagrant violation of election laws. I mean, I personally think it is, but we'll see what the court decides.
They had 5 candidates, and the 5 got in?
No, they had 5 candidates for a 4-seat election. But they spent the money of 5 candidates. Right, so... bit of bullshit right there. They did the same thing in Alexandria, where they had 1-seat constituencies with 2 or 3 candidates running. In Sinai, they had 6 candidates in South Sinai for 2 seats. That kind of thing, and that obviously
it's
means
like
they can spend
they are
more.
Using the system, so.
Exactly, like they're not exceeding the limit; they're changing their limit. And obviously, like communists don't really—they're not famous for having money, so we never really ran more candidates than we had to. In most constituencies, we only ran like a couple candidates. Like in Naga Hammadi, for example, there were, I think, 3 seats, and we ran 2 candidates, and we won 2 seats, right? Maybe we should have run 3, but we didn't have the funds to do that. Tagamo had more funds because they have a broader base, but again, we don't exactly work together all the time. This all led to a split in the party, where people who were with Haysom, who thought we should contest the system, like we shouldn't be part of the system anymore. And the people who were closer to Gadad Hariri were like, just accept the reality that we're in, work within the system. And I'm sort of on the fence, right? If I was with Gadad Hariri the whole way, I wouldn't have left Matawan either. But I have to focus on creating a career for myself. I want to work in government, so either way, I'm going to have to deal with the reality of working within the state. There are already a bunch of communists within the state. And to go back to Alexandria and Borsaid, right? The governor of Borsaid, Adel Ghatbon, he led the militias in Borsaid. He was the guy who came up with the Republic of the Canal when that happened under Morsi. And he's been governor of Borsaid ever since. The governor of Aswan, I think his name is Ahmed Ibrahim. He was also a member of the Communist Party there. And he was one of the organizers in 2013. He's a Nubian. A lot of Nubians were involved in organizing. I think of Aswan's 5 MPs, 2 of them are left wing right now. So we have a presence in a lot of these areas. The thing is, it's sort of unclear where the movement goes from here. You have the people who stuck with the Republican People's Party.
You mean from here, from 2021?
Yeah, from where we are now. We exist in parliament. You have...
Too insignificant.
Exactly. Like, most recently, when they came back for the second session of this parliament, the Republican People's Party formed a coalition with the Nation's Future Party. They don't have the 2/3 they need to pass major legislation, but it's close, right? They're only missing like 20 MPs. You can get those independents anywhere, right? They still struggle sometimes, but it's easier now. And that's more or less like the biggest betrayal, right? Like top 10 anime betrayals. But then you have the Homeland Defenders Party, who changed the head of the party in parliament to a guy who detests the Republican People's Party. More or less to become part of the opposition with Tagamo. And it's really unclear where we go from here. We're still part of legislation. There's still legislation that goes through us. I say us even though I've left the party, but we don't know. Tagamo still has a say. They can still block legislation effectively. It's a skill they honed in 2015. They were very good at causing crises. But it's still unclear where we go from here. Like if elections happened again, what parties run? There are still
in
other parties.
2026 elections.
Even before 2025, 2026, it's still unclear where we go. Right. The main Communist Party doesn't know what it's doing anymore. At least that was at the point where I left. There was no clear direction. The last thing they tried was they tried to join a liberal critique of the state. It was that one candidate from Kafr Sheikh. Can't remember, his name escapes me, but he was a big anti-establishment guy who lost his election and claimed that he had documents to prove that it was rigged, but then he couldn't produce them.
Ahmed Tantawi.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hariri joined his challenge, which
I saw the documents.
Yeah, and it didn't really go anywhere because like they weren't substantial, right? He claimed to have more than he did, and Hariri fell for it, right? Like he joined the court case. And that made him look really bad, especially within the party. Like, you're siding with a liberal who you don't know, who you fought against in parliament before, right? It felt like...
But weren't they both part of the 25, 30...
Yes, yeah, it was a coalition, more or less, of fuck the government. It still exists, right?
It has only one member, 2 members.
Yeah, the problem is... Right now, it's just 2 independents. Even Tagamo and Social Democratic Party, they both left it. They're now in a coalition with the Homeland Defenders. And the coalition, it doesn't even have a name. Like, they don't know where they're going with it. It's more or less just, we're not the nation's future party. they're still relevant, right? You can't really pass laws as just one party right now, thankfully. Thankfully, they didn't get two-thirds. But it's still unclear where we go from here. And it's... For the next elections, no one really knows what's going to happen, especially with party lists, right? Where it's not... The unified list isn't going to happen again. Especially because of the betrayal that happened, changing seats like after the election's over. No one's going to trust the nation's future party anymore. And no one's going to trust the Republican People's Party to be left-wing anymore. To their credit, though, they do want to do some things with the local development law, the local election law. They want to allow the left to have more of a say locally. But it's still dubious, right? You have a billionaire as the vice head of the party. Even if you want to give them credit where it's due, the movement is too fractured to really have any sort of left unity, right? I think based on where its history is, you could say that this phase is over.
Which phase?
The phase that we're in now from like post-revolution. You could say this phase is more or less over. Like the Communist Party does not meaningfully exist right now. The Homeland Defenders Party exists. They're a real party, they have party HQs, right? They have a building like in New Cairo as an HQ, right? They exist, they're legal, they have MPs. The Republican People's Party are not a communist party anymore. The Communist Party itself has fewer and fewer members. It's more or less back to square one, where they're not illegal, but they don't run candidates anywhere anymore.
And I mean, I don't want to sound very pessimistic, but if you're gonna think realistically about the next parliament elections, 2025, 2026, let's like try to classify it into two classes. First one are the state-backed and state-created parties, the Mustaqbal Watan, this whole coalition.
Mm-hmm.
And the second class is the Social Democratic Party, which are actually in part of the Mustaqbal Watan coalition.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. But they rank candidates in their list, the last election.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was on the list. everyone except Noor.
So if you look at it that way, I don't see any parties that are not affiliated or created or backed by the state get in. And if they did get in, they would be very insignificant.
It really,
very insignificant.
It really depends, honestly. Like, I still don't think it's fair to call the nation's future party as created by the state, but they are backed.
But,
right? It's an alliance of convenience,
I mean,
more
both.
Than anything.
Technically, you know, they held the first meeting inside the Egyptian intelligence HQ.
Yeah. Like it's,
and it's funding as well.
It's as a party, it's not really a party, right? It's sort of like what the Communist Party was, right? It's an alliance of convenience.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have a similar viewpoint of where we want to get to, but the fractures occur when we talk about how we get there. If you ever look at Parliament, right? If you ever just watch some of the feeds, you'll see Nation's Future Party candidates or MPs arguing with each other. Like all the time, like they despise each other. It's the same thing with the Republican People's Party. Same thing with the Communist Party internally.
But despite these,
they still have a goal, right? It's still aligned with what the state wants.
Exactly, and that's what matters.
Yeah, and the problem too is that the state itself isn't coherent, right? Like,
what do you mean by coherent?
Sisi himself doesn't really have a clear ideology. Manduli, obviously, like. He sort of flip-flops, but he's still farther left than Sisi at the very least. And then you have people like Tara Amir, right? Tara Amir started as a socialist. He was, I think he was part of Tagamo for a while, right? In his youth. but now he's more of a, he's softened a bit. And he's the guy in charge of
the central bank government.
Yeah, he's the guy in charge of regulating the banks. And no matter how far left you are, you could be literal.
You can't be a communist.
Yeah, you could be literal Marx, but like if you're in charge of the central bank, you have to at least listen to the banks.
Mm.
And I would say like that's the three. Those are the three real power brokers, right? You have Sisi, you have Makbouli, and you have the banks. I don't see a way you break that up. I think the one shining ray of hope is that we control more of the government than we otherwise would if we weren't a problem.
But it depends who you're talking about. Like, if you want to think realistically, you should classify all parties or politicians that are not affiliated with the state as one block, if you get what I mean.
As the opposition.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that would be very uniting and very realistic. But if you're going to talk about communist and socialist parties in particular, I think that makes it kind of, makes it very unrealistic. Maybe it might be realistic, but it's too big.
Honestly,
very revolutionary.
The two problems, and this was the main problem that made me leave, right? I don't see the path forward. The two problems are the communists and socialists did too well in the election to think of themselves as not a viable bloc.
Which one? Which election?
Like, especially Hamet Wolden, right? Like they...
The 2021?
2020, yeah.
Mm.
Especially Hamet Wolden did really well in the election, especially in individual seats. The Republican People's Party did well as well, but where you classify them is up to you at this point. And in a lot of elections, it was very close. Like a lot of Tagamwa candidates got into the second round of their election. A lot of people from the Bread and Freedom Party were top 10 in their seats. The Workers and Peasants Party. All of these were offshoots of the Communist Party.
What about the Karama Party?
Yes. The
they didn't
dignity.
Get any seats, right?
They got their asses kicked.
They have like four leading members in jail, right?
Yeah. One of them got out recently,
Khaled
Dawood,
Khaled Dawood and another one, it's called Mohammed al-Masri,
I think so,
like
yeah.
But
Khaled Dawood left the party at this point after he got out. I think he's working more with Tagamwa nowadays and Hizbut Dastur, right?
Yeah.
It's more of a big tent sort of thing,
yeah.
Right? That's the other issue, right? The easiest way is to work as an opposition.
The easiest way what?
Is to work as an opposition.
Yeah.
The problem is that if you form an opposition and a big tent sort of thing, sort of like the Justice Party or like the Freedom Party, the problem is you have to work with liberals, right? And this is... You have to work with liberals, you have to work with neoliberals, right? You have to work with people like the Sadat Party. And let's be honest, nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to work with them on the left, I mean. And this is the impasse we're at. We're not big enough to win on our own. We don't want to work with the right, even if we agree baseline that the state needs fixing. And the right don't want to work with us, right? We're not the only, it takes two to tango and neither one wants to tango. So really, like I keep saying, I don't know where we go from here. I am hopeful in that we control a lot of the student unions and public universities. If local elections actually happen, we might have a chance. A lot of the unions are still on our side,
but
how do we mobilize it?
I don't want to interrupt, but isn't campaigning and politics in general banned on public universities?
It's banned in the context of elections, right? But not in student elections. They're officially nonpartisan, but yeah, there's no such thing as an apolitical person.
But in that scenario, I see state-backed and state-affiliated candidates.
Oh, of
don't
course.
Work,
yeah,
just
they,
like what happened with the constitutional amendment, 2019.
Yeah, whenever the state wants to back someone, they have the resources to do it. But again, the problem is that the state doesn't have a specific ideology, right? Some of the people they back end up being on our side more often than not. I think... It's a good place to leave off of, like, the uncertainty of it all. But I do think, honestly, speaking as someone who's going to join the state, I do think that there's a bit of hope that, especially with the emergency law gone now, that they'll loosen their grip a bit. But even then, the parties that they've established will live beyond the grip, right? They'll have their own independent grip. Might be a problem for the state in the future. Especially if Sisi leaves at any point, if he actually leaves in 2030, maybe the nation's future party becomes the de facto ruling party. Maybe they collapse before that. No one really knows at this point. But I guess it's the uncertainty that makes it fun. It was uncertainty that made it fun in 2011. So we'll see what ends up happening.
Do you have any closing remarks or something you want to
If there are ever citizen militias again, we're going to see the next wave. Yeah, yeah. Whenever the police disappear, that's when we reappear.
But thank you, Ahmed, for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So, guys, if you reach this part of the podcast, please make sure to leave a good review on Apple Podcasts if you enjoyed it. Make sure to like the YouTube video. Make sure to subscribe and turn the notification bell on. Thank you, guys, for listening. Out. غنوا لرفيق ينثر في الحارات ورود الحب غنوا لرفيق يسقط من أجل الحزن غنوا لرفيق ينثر في الحارات ورود الحب غنوا لقتيل يبسط في وجه القتلة للأم يطاردها كلب الكواليس غنوا لرفيق يسقط من أجل الحزن غنوا لعراق نعرفه غنوا لعراق يعرفنا غنوا لعراق نعرفه غنوا لعراق يعرفنا لخلايانا لرفاق مجهولين ورفاق صعدوا مملكة الفاشين غنوا لرفيق يسقط من أجل الحزن لنهار يأتي يطرد عنا الريح السوداء غنوا للضوء القادم من ساحات الفقراء لنهار يأتي يطرد عنا الريح السوداء غنوا لرفيق يسقط من أجل الحزن غنوا لرفيق يسقط من أجل الحزن غنوا لرفيق يسقط من أجل الحزن